Okay, let me start. Good morning. So today I'm going to discuss and show another aspect of renormalization in quantum field theory, which is in some sense complementary of what I've been doing. So I will not discuss something really different, but I will discuss what renormalization means in a quantum field.
Hi, Francois.
Yes.
Please turn on your microphone.
I switch it off, but now it's on again. Is it working? For me, it's working. Okay. So what I'm going to do is what is now called the mid-subject. And the name Wilson comes from Ken Wilson, the same Ken Wilson that I discussed a little bit yesterday when discussing the operator for the text man. And Ken Wilson, in fact, devised a way to look at renormalization in quantum field theory because he was, in fact, interested. He was he is both a high-energy physicist and a statistical physicist. He started in high-energy physics, but he got interested into studying the critical phenomena that you have heard about in the statistical mechanics course. And he understood really what could be done with the idea of recursion relation and looking at the scaling behavior in statistical mechanics. And I think Leo Kadanoff, who was one of the pioneers in the field, discussed you about that. But so he tried to look at a quantum field theory from the point of view of going from low, from high energy to low energy, instead of going from low energy to high energy, which is what we have been doing before. So let me remember what we have been doing before. Remember, here is something scale that I will call, this is the energy scale. This is energy scale, this is low energy, high energies. Okay. And when trying to construct a consistent quantum field theory, up to now, but what we have been doing later on is that we have seen that we start from a scale energy mu, which is a physical in front. That's the physical energy scale. That's the scale at which we are performing our experiments, measuring things and trying to make contact between the theory and the experiment, the observation of the theory. And in order to construct a consistent quantum theory, in fact, at these physical scales, the coupling constants of the theory, namely what the renormalized coupling constant, are well defined because we are trying to make contact between this coupling constant and the results of the experiment. So they are fixed, if you want. They are fixed by either in our calculation of or because of the observation of the experiments we are doing. And what we are doing when we try to quantize the theory is to take into account all the quantum fluctuation. In a functional integral formalism, for instance, we are taking into account all the fluctuation of the field at scales above the physical scales where we are observing. So in fact, what we are doing in substance is that you start from a theory and we are adding here, we are adding the degrees of freedom. We are adding degrees of freedom. Degrees of freedom up to a high momentum scale, which is the ultraviolet regulator. So here we have the physical scale, and here we have the ultraviolet cutoff in energy. Okay? And we have seen that in order to have renormalized coupling constant fixed, in fact, if we take into account all the degrees of freedom of the quantum theory up to this scale here. In fact, this means that the theory here is defined in terms of bare coupling constant. Okay, that I call, for instance, G here that in my previous calculation. And we have to fine tune, have to be fine tuned. They have to be adjusted with the ultraviolet cutoff so that the physics here is under control. And what you are doing is that, in fact, you are, in order to get a consistent theory, you are moving this scale up to infinity in order to have a theory which is defined in a continuum space-time, and there are no problems with locality and causality at short distances. Okay. So that's the traditional point of, that's the point of view that I have been explained before, which was the point of view of on renormalization in quantum physics theory from the 40s to the 70s, historically. Now, Wilson, in fact, proposed to the, what Wilson is doing is, in fact, do the opposite. So this is still the same energy scale. This is the energy. And take the idea that you have a high energy cutoff, lambda. Take it seriously. Assume that it's some kind, it's a physical cutoff. Well, it might be, for instance, of course, the Planck mass. It can be, in fact, the scale at which above this theory, you know that your theory breaks down because you have to add more degrees of freedom. For instance, it can be the unification mass in a grand unified theory. It can be anything. So it's, you assume that you have a theory and you know that your theory describes well the system or the world below these energy scales and above these energy scales. New physics emerge, but you don't care about this new physics, okay? And the idea now is the opposite. The idea is you have a high energy cutoff here, which is a physical cutoff of the theory. And you are interested in what is going on at a low energy scale mu, you see? You assume that you have a theory which is valid at the Planck scale, but we are interested in what's happening at the energy of the TeV, for instance, if we are thinking about what's going on in at the LHC. Okay. And so, in fact, what you have to do if you are interested in what's happening at a low energy scale is you have a theory which you assume is well defined for all the energy scale. You have to subtract, in some sense, minus, you see, minus. You have to subtract the degrees of freedom of your theory up to this energy scale to get here an effective theory which will be valid from the energy mu up to lower energy scales, you see? So it's in some sense a complementary point of view. Here you fixed the physics here and you had the degrees of freedom up to infinity. Here you consider that you have a given theory up to energy scale lambda and you try to remove the degrees of freedom in order to see what is the effective theory. And the question is, what is the effective theory? What is it? And in particular, what are the effective or renormalized coupling constant? So you see, it's here you are going from down up, and here you are going up down. But of course, those two pictures are related. So, and this point of view, in fact, leads to very interesting results. And I will, in fact, I will do an example of a calculation to show you how this works. So I shall do an example of calculation, and we'll try to deduce some general principle out of that of calculation. So I shall do a lot of approximation in my calculation, and I will use what is called, in fact, the local potential approximation, which is a very crude way to make a randomization group calculation, but it's still it's very instructive and it leads to interesting and sometimes, in fact, really physical results. So let me explain what I'm doing. I start from a quantum field theory with a scalar field phi, okay, and I consider that its action. I'm working in the Euclidean, mostly because the calculations are more simple. You have no I factor, but so I'm doing the calculation in the Euclidean formalism. And I'm assuming that I'm in a d-dimensional space-time. And I take the action to be exactly the action of the phi 4 field, except that I'm considering more general kind of interaction by assuming that I have a potential V, which is called the local potential, which contains not only a phi cube and a phi 4 interaction, but it may contain an arbitrary number of interactions. So let us consider that it is, for instance, V of phi is the term, so it contains a phi squared cube, so it's a kinetic, so T is the analog of the mass squared, but it will turn out that it can be negative, so I call it T. Then I have my usual factor G over 4, factorial 4 phi 4, but then I can have an additional term like H over 6 phi 6 plus higher order terms, you see, and you may also add odd terms, odd powers of phi without any problem. So I consider that I have a local potential like that, okay? But in addition, I have a sharp momentum cutoff, lambda, exactly the same kind of cutoff I have been using in the last lecture, which means that in fact, when I am performing a functional integration, the field phi of x, or better consider its Fourier transform component phi hat of k. K is a four moment, is a d momentum. Okay. Phi hat of k is well defined only for when k is less than lambda. So the component, the non-zero component of the Fourier transform of the field we are considering are well defined for the modulus of the momenta less than lambda. So in other words, you see, the field in momentum space is defined a ball in momentum space here. This is momentum space, the field are well defined in a ball of radius lambda. And otherwise, there are no component for the momentum. Okay. So now I want to compute, starting from this theory, okay. I want to compute a functional integral, which is something like integral over all the field configuration, exponential minus S of the action. This is the Euclidean action, let us say. Well, I remove. It will be implicitly the Euclidean action from now on. And It's implicit here that I'm integrating with a measure on the field configuration, which are defined only in this ball in momentum space. So the measure depends implicitly on lambda. You are cutting out all the modes of the field, which are above this momentum scale. Okay, so that's a big functional integral, which if we know how to compute, we know how to compute all the correlation function as a vacuum expectation value of operator of the theory. Yes? Yes, but they cannot vary too fast because they cannot vary with the frequency. So I have a limit on how wide the configuration are. It's equivalent to put the theory on a lattice. You can define that on a lattice, which will be exactly the same, but the calculation will be less rigorous but more simple with that kind of regulator. So what does it mean now to perform this, to ask this kind of question? To ask what's happening if I am subtracting degrees of freedom. So it means that I want here, if I want to go from a momentum scale lambda to a momentum scale, a smaller momentum scale, this means that I want to integrate over the high frequency or without, but only on these. So let me do the following thing. I have this big momentum shell with lambda, and I want to integrate on all the modes phi hat of k, such that where k is in between lambda and lambda prime here, which is here, which is smaller than lambda. So I want to integrate only on the modes which are in this momentum shell. Okay. So in order to do that, it's quite simple to do it in principle, because simply you have to consider that you separate the field phi into something which I call phi high frequency, this is large, plus a phi which contains the low frequency modes, and what are my... So this contains the high frequency, or high k, and this contains the contribution of the low k, low momentum. And this you can do in Fourier space very easily, because you assume that simply that phi, the Fourier transform of the high frequency mode, is equal to phi of k, if k, the modulus of k is in between lambda and lambda prime, and zero otherwise, while you take for phi the low frequency part of k to be zero if k is larger than lambda prime and lambda, and phi of k if modulus of k is less than lambda prime. Okay, so I just separate and I call the contribution, this contribution of the high frequency mode, I recast them into this high frequency component of the field, and the other one, those which are inside here, I recast them into the low frequency component of the field. You see? Okay, so once I have done that, what I want to do is simply, I need my phone. So, if I want to do that, this means that in fact, instead of integrating over all the modes, to do this calculation is I will integrate only on the high frequency mode. If I integrate, imagine that I do the functional integral by integrating only, I integrate only on the high frequency component of the field. You see? Then, obviously, I get something which depends on the component of the field we are not integrating out. So this depends on phi, the lower component phi. This, okay. So this is a function of phi smaller. And I can call this simply by definition, I take it to be something I call minus the effective action of the low frequency part of the field. So take it to be a definition. Okay, this is a definition of the effective action. It's not exactly the effective action, same effective action that I've been discussing before, so it's another effective action for the low frequency part. Frequency field component phi small. See? So it's something which could be very complicated to compute, but and when I'm doing that, so let me call this rather than the low frequency field, let me call this the average frequency field phi hat. So let me consider that here I am in fact integrating here in phi. Phi is defined as the average configuration plus the high frequency mode, because in fact it corresponds to, you can see that, for instance, phi hat is obviously defined as of k is defined as an integral over the high frequency modes on the ball only of phi k, if you want, if in terms of Fourier transform. You take the full fields, you average over the component, and you get phi hat of k, which is some average. So it corresponds to some average field. Okay? So by definition, in fact, in this calculation, phi tilde, the average field will be equal to the low frequency part of the mode. But in some other normalization group calculation, they are defined differently. So that's why I prefer to keep this notation. Okay? So now, imagine that you have been able to compute this effective action for phi tilde, the average field. You see? This effective action is an action which is valid for a theory. Okay, S effective of phi tilde is an action for a theory with cutoff lambda prime. Because you have integrated over the other mode. So the field phi tilde lives here. It doesn't live here. So if you want to compare S effective of phi tilde with the original action S of phi, you cannot compare really two theories which do not have the same ultraviolet cutoff. So in order to compare that, you must rescale, perform some rescalings. You see? So what kind of rescalings do we have to do? Okay? We want that So we have an average field which depends on x. Or, if you prefer, equivalently, its Fourier transform depends on k, with k lower than lambda prime, which is smaller than lambda. And let us assume, let us note that lambda prime is lambda divided by a factor that I will call S, which is where S is a scale factor, rescaling factor. S is larger than 1. Okay? Just a redefinition of lambda prime with respect to lambda. In order to do this, in fact, to compare, I have to just perform rescaling. What are the rescalings that I have to perform? First, I have to rescale x into, I have to rescale the k, if you want, into some k primes divided by s, so that k prime now is smaller than lambda. And I have to rescale, so it's equivalent to redefine the distance as x equals s times x prime. Okay? And in addition, you will see immediately what it means. I will have to consider that the rescaled, the average field of x prime will be some s to some power times, I redefine this as a renormalized field of x prime with a power that I will define just later on, and which will be, in fact, which I denote as, where is it? It's a dimension of the field, but simply I have to be sure it's minus delta, where delta will be called the dimension of the field. So I'm just performing a rescaling of the distances and the rescaling of the field for reasons which will become clear, so that the effective action for the field average will be, we don't change the effective action, so it will be defined as a renormalized action of the field phi renormalized. And what we have to do is to compare this to the original action for the original field. And we, by doing that, we will have taken into account the degrees of freedom in between lambda and lambda prime. So we will have performed the operation of starting from a cutoff lambda. We went to a cutoff lambda over s. You see the idea. OK, so now let us perform this calculation for the kind of scalar action for a scalar potential that we have been doing here. And that's where we shall be doing approximation. Okay. So first, I do exactly that kind of thing. So I separate phi into a high frequency mode and a low frequency mode. And I want to compute the effective action. So, since I have scaling factors here, I will redefine the action. I will note them A of phi. I'm sorry. Yeah. I will denote actions for the field will be denoted A instead of S in order not to mix the action with the rescaling factors S. So it's just an unfortunate notation that I've started in my notes. Okay. So what I want to compute, I have an original action A of phi, which is integral 1/2 d mu phi squared plus V of phi. See? Integrated over space time. Integral d dx. Okay. Now I write that phi equal phi tilde plus the high energy frequency part, where this is defined only for momentum k less than lambda divided by s, and this is defined for momenta k, which lies in my momentum shell that I've written before. And I want to compute what is the effective action defined as exponential of minus the effective or renormalized action for phi tilde, defined as an integral, functional integral over the high energy component, high momentum component of the field of exponential of, and that's, of course, that's an A, I'm very sorry, of an exponential of minus the action for the full field phi. See? Okay. So, in order to do that, it's a calculation which is almost the same than the kind of calculation we have been doing before, except that I'm integrating only on the high energy momentum mode. You see? So, now I will do a first approximation. Approximation one, I do a one loop calculation only. So I will cut, I will expand phi only to leading order in phi in the fluctuation. So I replace the full calculation, full integral, the full integral will be replaced by a Gaussian integral that I will describe. Okay. The second approximation that I will be doing with it, that at the same time, is that I will consider that phi tilde of x, I will treat it as a constant field phi tilde. In fact, I do as if phi tilde had only a component for k equals 0. Okay, so I'm doing two approximations which can be justified, or at least can be better justified. But there's no approximation, but I won't discuss that here. Just take them as some very crude approximation, which leads some interesting results. Okay. So if I am doing that, you see, what I have to do is that I can expand. So let me first expand the action. I expand the action A of phi. And this will be given by, so I expand, in fact, what I have to expand in the, is the potential V. I expand the potential V of phi, and in that case, the potential V of phi is simply, obviously, the integral of the potential V of phi is integral over dd of x of V of phi tilde, which I treat as something approximately constant. Then I expand in phi hat, so I can write this as V prime of phi tilde times the high component constant plus 1/2 of phi tilde V phi tilde times phi tilde, okay, plus higher order terms. No. Since I assume that phi tilde of x is a constant, this is just a constant. This contains the high frequency mode. So when I integrate, so here all the modes are larger than lambda over sigma. So it's easy that you see that when you integrate over x, a function which contains oscillating components and no zero momentum, this gives zero. Okay? And this doesn't give zero. So this, you have a constant here, and here you have something which is non-zero. And if I'm doing a word loop calculation, I neglect. Oh, it's simply because you can rewrite this as, you can, if you have a function integral over x of a function f of x is the Fourier transform of the component at k equals zero of the Fourier transform of the function. You see? Now, the Fourier transform of the function, which contains the high energy modes of the function, is defined. Is defined here. It's not defined here. In other words, it means that it is zero everywhere inside the inner ball. So here we have that the Fourier component of the high frequency mode of the field K are zero if K is less than lambda divided by S. So in particular, for K equals zero, you see? Pardon? Why?
Why do you do the Fourier transform only in the inner ball?
Why do I?
But when you have that full ball,
yes,
and you don't do the Fourier transform over the shell.
Yes.
Why is that?
That's a calculation I'm doing, and I want to see what is the result of the calculation. You see? Okay, so if I am doing that, then I can rewrite the action as I can rewrite the action of phi tilde plus the high frequency mode as something which would be simply integral dd of x. Well, there is in fact the term d of phi tilde that I am neglecting because I'm neglecting these terms because neglecting it since I assume that phi tilde is the most constant, but let us write it again. Okay? And then I have v of phi tilde, which is a constant, almost a constant. And then I have, so this is a part which is associated to phi tilde. And then I have a part which is simply one half of course, the derivative part of the high frequency modes is non-zero. The field oscillates widely. And then I have something which is one half of the second derivative of the field of the potential at phi tilde times the square of the field phi hat. Okay? And so I have to integrate something like that, you see? Now, if you go from this to the Fourier transform of phi hat, you can rewrite these terms. You know, this term can be rewritten simply as integral these terms can be rewritten as the Fourier transform of the high component part of the field at a momentum k. That's factor one half. What is the Fourier transform of this operator? It's minus k squared. Remember, it's a calculation that we have already been doing many times when computing the propagator. And then I have the second derivative of the potential, but for a fixed value of the field, which is the value of the average field. And then you have the Fourier transform of the high component of the mode with for minus k. Okay. So you see that if you integrate, it means that integrating over phi of the high component part of the field amounts to do quantum field theory calculation with, for instance, a propagator which is with an operator which is simply defined for k in between lambda and lambda divided by s. See, so we can, if we are integrating only on the high frequency mode of the field, it's like if we were trying to do a quantum field theory calculation for a field, but simply instead of having a high energy cutoff here, so an ultraviolet cutoff if you want, it has also a low energy or infrared cutoff. Okay. Now, in fact, we can make the integration now over the field phi, the high component of the field, in the functional integration we want to do. Remember, we want to do a calculation like that. We can do the calculation because it will become a Gaussian integral. So what do we get at the end? We get that the functional integral over the high frequency mode of the field, exponential minus times the action of the average field plus the high energy component of the field. You see, there will be a constant term here, which will be exponential of minus 1/2 of integral over dx of, well, I'm sorry, of 1/2 of d phi tilde squared plus v of phi tilde. This is which comes out from this term when you put it into the exponential. And then you have another terms which come from the integration of phi tilde, and which will be something like the it will be the something like it will be something like the result of integral over d phi hat of exponential of minus 1/2 and an integral over k. In fact, and there will be something like phi hat of k minus k squared plus m squared times phi hat of minus k. You see? And that's a Gaussian integral. Okay? You have to take into account some. And so this will give finally something which will be the analogous of the analog of the determinant of the operator minus the Laplacian plus, I'm sorry, plus the derivative of phi tilde. Phi tilde to the power minus 1/2, except that this determinant is defined for when integrating over this Laplacian operator is well defined only for momenta between lambda and lambda divided by s. See? So, yes? Pardon? Yeah, there's some 2 pi. Yeah. I'm just writing it in a very sketchy way. So you see, we are computing something which is very, very much like the kind of calculation we have been doing before when computing the effective action. So you see, that's one of the reasons. So it's a calculation which is so exactly as in computing the effective action, except that we are integrating not over all the momenta of the field, but also over the momenta of the field in between this energy shell, you see? So we can now write this determinant of this operator as usual. We can write the determinant as the exponential of minus 1/2 trace of the log of this determinant. That's the Joule trick. You see, this is equal to the exponential of minus 1/2 of this determinant. Now, what does mean the trace? It means that I'm computing integral over the Wool space of the matrix element x of the logarithm of minus Laplacian plus the derivative of phi tilde. Okay, this is the trace. Trace means taking the sum over all the diagonal elements of the operator. I can write the trace of the diagonal element as a sum over all the diagonal elements in position space states. And now, since this object is independent on the position of x, because phi tilde is taken considered as constant, I can represent this as exponential of minus 1/2 integral dd of x times an integral over a momentum shell k divided by 2p squared times the logarithm of k squared plus, you see, well, I have to divide this to make this a normalization. Okay, so I can represent this matrix element by an integral in Fourier space, and that's something which is very natural. It's nothing but what we did before, for instance, by representing. Yes, it is. Remember, it's exactly the same thing that we can represent the matrix element of the operator 1 minus lambda plus m squared x as integral d dk over 2 pi over d times 1 over k squared of m squared. So we are doing exactly here the same calculation. We are representing x times logarithm of minus Laplacian operator plus m plus something which is called v tilde of phi. Okay. I'm writing that this is nothing but in Fourier transform the logarithm of the Fourier transform of this operator, which is plus k squared plus the second derivative potential for the field phi tilde. You see, it's exactly the same calculation rules. Instead of computing the matrix element of the inverse of this operator, I am computing the matrix element of the logarithm of this operator. But you see, the calculations are the same. And so you see that at the end, you have here an exponential of minus 1/2. You have an integral over the Wool space. And you have some number which depend on the second derivative of the potential at phi tilde. So this means that you doing these two approximations, I get an exact, complicated, but exact result for the effective potential. The effective action for the field, average field phi tilde is, what is it? You have this first term, which is just the original action. But now, estimated for the average field phi tilde instead of the field phi s. And then I have a correction, which is simply 1/2 integral dd of x of some function, which that I can call a correction, which is simply the integral over d dk divided by 2 pi to the power d of the logarithm of k squared plus the second derivative of phi at phi tilde. And in order to have, in fact, if you do the calculation a bit more carefully, you have to normalize it by, if you want, lambda squared, because this has to be dimensionless. So it's just a change in the measure. But the important thing is that you remember that here you are integrating over the momenta between lambda and lambda divided by s in the momentum shell. So here you have to integrate in the momentum shell between lambda over lambda and lambda over s. And this is, you see, just a term which is local in the potential. So it means that you can write the action so that the potential V of phi has been replaced by a potential V effective of phi tilde, which is equal to the original potential V for phi tilde plus a correction, which is given by this function, one half of this function, which is a function of V, the second derivative of the potential at phi tilde. You see? So we have just performed, you have just a change in the potential V of phi. Okay? So doing those quite strong approximation, we have an exact recursion relation, an exact formula. Okay? So now, so we have compute, so we have performed the first step. We have performed the going from S effective, from S to S effective. And we have shown that it amounts to going from a potential to an effective potential. Okay. But now, remember, the field phi tilde leaves as component only for k between lambda over s and zero. So we have to perform the rescaling. Okay? In order to perform the rescalings, what we have to do is to change k into k prime divided by s, or if you prefer to change x into x prime times s. And if we do that, in the action, you have the derivative terms. If you make a change in the action, the derivative terms, one half of d. So we have an integral, remember, which is integral over d dx of one half over dx mu of phi tilde squared. If I make a change of variables like that to obtain something, to rewrite these kinetic terms of an integral over dd of x prime, one half d over dx prime mu of phi tilde squared, this doesn't work because I've made this change of variables, so I have a factor s to the power d minus 2, because I have a factor s to the power d, and I have a factor s, 1 over s, per derivative. So these terms cannot be compared with this one. It's not the same form. There is a scaling factor. So in order to do that, you have also to rescale the field, exactly what I explained here, by saying that I have to define a renormalized field phi by saying that phi tilde will be a renormalized phi, then let me write an s by explaining that I'm doing rescaling by a factor s, where phi tilde will be equal to phi s times s to the power minus delta, where delta is d minus 2 over 2 and will be the dimension of field. You see? And if I do this, perform this change of variables, I have a s to the power 2 minus d, which cancels this one, and I rewrite this as integral dd of x prime 1 half of d over dx prime mu of phi renormalized squared. So by performing this rescaling, the kinetic term in the action has not changed. So I can really compare them. But of course, then the renormalized action, I'm sorry, this is an A. Ah, this is an A, this is an A, this is an A, this is an A. Yes. But by doing that, finally, what you have is that you have to perform the rescaling also in the action. So you see that now the renormalized or the action for the field phi s is simply integral over 1 half of d phi s squared plus a renormalized potential Vs with Vs given by this, I should front up, mid up, it's okay, with Vs of phi s equals the original potential. Oh, I'm sorry. Now this is there is a difference. We have performed a rescaling in the field. So we have s to the power d, and we have a v effective of s to the power 2 minus d over 2 times phi s with v effective of s given by this formula. It is given by this equation plus the original potential plus 1 half of this integral over some momentum in some momentum shell, which depend on the derivative of phi tilde. You see? Okay. So we have an explicit formula which tells us how the potential in the action gets renormalized when you go down from when you integrate over all the high frequency degrees of freedom of the field and go from there to there. You see? We have an explicit formula. It's not very, very, very simple yet, but we shall make another simplification. And the formula becomes much more simple if I consider infinitesimal transformation. Let me perform an infinitesimal transformation, an infinitesimal transformation by assuming that S is just 1 plus some small ds. Ds is much smaller than 1, so it means that I have my big momentum shell here with a factor lambda, and I am just integrating over a small momentum shell here of width lambda ds. So I am integrating over it. Okay. And in this case, the calculation becomes more simple simply because instead of integrating over all the k, I am just integrating over, I integrate over a sphere, if you want, s d minus 1. The sphere, the d minus 1 dimensional sphere in d-dimensional space with the width Lambda ds. So in that case, the effective potential for phi tilde becomes the original potential for phi tilde plus the integral over a sphere, and the integral over a sphere, so I've seen we have this factor 1/2, then we have a factor 1 over 2 pi squared, to the 2 pi to the power of the dimension of the sphere. Then we have something which would just be lambda to the power b times ds times a factor which I will call vd, where vd is the surface of the sphere of dimension d minus 1. And there is a nice formula which tells you that the sphere of dimension d minus 1 is equal to 2 over pi to the power d over 2 times gamma. I'm sorry, there is a d minus 1 over 2, I think. No, it's d over 2 times gamma of d over 2. Okay. Oh, no, I'm sorry, there is a 2, there is a pi d over 2 times gamma of a d over 2. Okay? The unit sphere. And then you have the logarithm, but here k squared. You see, in this area, k squared is always equal to lambda squared up to some negligible correction. So you get simply a logarithm of k squared plus the second derivative of the potential for phi tilde. And in order to make it something dimensionless, in fact, it's natural. It's just a normalization of the renormalization of the. So you get just here, you see, the effective potential is the potential plus a correction, which depends non-linearly of the second derivative of phi tilde. You see? And from this, so and you have a ds, you see. So it means that the change in the effective potential is just small compared to the original one. Yes?
It could be a lambda squared instead of k squared, or in the logarithm.
Pardon?
Inside the logarithm, what's the meaning of k squared?
Oh, I'm sorry, it's lambda squared. No, I'm very sorry. It's lambda squared. Yes. K squared equal lambda squared, so it's lambda squared. Yes. You are right. Okay. And so now you have this formula where you have the infinitesimal change for the effective potential. So I can now go from this to there. And you see then that V of S in that case, if S is 1 plus ds of phi S, this is just, well, it's just a phi here. Now phi S is just a dime. The thing which is there, Vs of phi is just V of phi plus some dV of phi, a small correction, where, and you can write that dV of phi, and you can divide it by d of s, is equal to. And then if you make the variation, remember here S, capital S is 1 plus ds. So you will have a factor d here. You have a factor d times v of phi. Then there is a change S in here with a factor 2 minus d over 2, which gives you a minus d minus 2 over 2 times phi times the derivative of v with respect to phi at the point phi. This comes from the fact that you change the, you rescale the field phi. Okay. This comes just for the sense, and then you have the contribution of this quantum fluctuation, which is given by this term, but this, since this is already proportional to ds, you don't need to rescale the field here, but you get finally a coefficient, you get some coefficient a times the logarithm of one plus lambda minus two times the second derivative of the potential v computed at the point v. You see? So here is the final result for the infinitesimal variation of the potential of the potential under such a renormalization procedure. See, which means that integrating over a small momentum shell from momentum momenta lambda to momenta lambda minus lambda times s amounts to change the potential according to this formula. Okay, and this term has two terms. Those two terms comes just from the dimensions of phi and x. So this comes from the canonical dimension of space and the field. And these terms comes from the quantum corrections. So the quantum physics is contained in this term. Okay. You see? And finally, in fact, you can now iterate the transformation, of course, by integrating over shells and shells and shells up to lambda prime equal lambda divided by s. But since if you iterate infinitesimal transformation and the infinitesimal transformation tells you that the variation of the potential depends only on the value of the potential of the value of the field and on the local properties of the potential in time of v. So you see, the variation of the potential in the action depends on the potential itself, on its first derivative, and on its second derivative. You see? So if you iterate the transformation by a scale factor s, which will be much smaller than one. Now, this means that instead of going from lambda to lambda divided by s with s small, we are going up to lambda divided by s much, much smaller than lambda by integrating a lot of times. Then, in fact, starting from a local potential v of phi, we end up with a local potential v of phi, which depends on s, where now s can be of the same order or one or much larger than one. And this equation, in fact, simply becomes simply an equation which is exactly the same, except that we replace this small s by this small s by your local derivative of s. So in fact, you can, this equation becomes now an equation like that. In fact, taking infinitesimal s amounts to make a logarithmic derivative. So in fact, this equation becomes partial differential flow equation in the space of all local potential V of phi. See? And it's an equation which involves on the right hand side, on the left hand side, just a logarithmic derivative of the potential with respect to the scale factor. So it's linear in log of S. It is linear in term of log of S. So which means that it is a flow equation in the space of couplings, but it is nonlinear, nonlinear in V, in phi. It is nonlinear in V. It's a, we tell you, because it involves, in fact, it involves V, V prime, the second derivative of the potential, and it's a logarithm of the second derivative. So see, this part is linear. It's just a scaling transformation on the field and the space. But this part is nonlinear because it involves a logarithm of something which involves the second derivative of the field. You see? So you have an equation which is, well, it's nice because it's a completely closed equation. But it is an equation which is complicated. So we have to study the properties of this equation, of course. And yes?
How do I choose? As, for example, if S is much bigger than 1, can we just choose any factor that is bigger than 1?
Well, now the question is the choice of a factor. You mean, how do I choose S?
Yeah.
It depends on the physical problem I am interested. You see, remember at the beginning here, lambda is the ultraviolet cutoff beyond which the theory, I don't know what the physics is. So it's, for instance, it's a man, it's a plat. Assume it's lambda is a Planck's mass. Okay? And now I have a theory which I assume. I assume that I know the theory which describes all the particles and the field of the universe which contains particle for dark matter, it may contain supersymmetry, it may contain a lot of things. So I know what is the theory of almost everything, the Planck's mass. But I am interested in what are the consequences of this theory when I'm doing experiments at the LHC. Or what are the consequences of this theory if I am doing experiments on at the scale of nuclear, low energy nuclear reactions? So So this is a Max Planck, but I can be interested in what's happening at an energy of the order of 1 GeV, of 1 GeV, of 1 MeV, or 1 EV, if I'm interested in what's happening in atoms, in molecules.
So you change the S.
So you just have to change the S.
Because of the experiment, right?
Yeah, it depends on the physics you are interested in. If you are interested into the physics at the time energy and assume that the theory of everything is defined by a simple scalar field, which of course it is not, then you have to compute what is the effective potential when S is given by the Planck's mass divided by expressed in Tev energy. Now, if you are going to see what's happening at the scale of what's happening in an atom, then you have to take an S which is much larger. So it depends on the physical problem you are interested in, you see. But now you have this flow of transformation, which if you know how to solve it, give you the physics, well, part of the physics. So that you have to see what is the physics coming from an effective potential or normalized potential. But you see the philosophy is that. You know, you assume that you know what's happening here at this energy scale, and you want to deduce what's happening at this energy scale. Yes?
Where did we use the assumption of locality of potential?
The fact that we changed the potential here, we used it because it leads to a simple calculation and to an explicit solution. But of course, it's just an approximation. So The fact that I'm using a local potential and that the action is just given by, always given by kinetic term plus a potential which is local, it's a very, very strong assumption. It's a mathematical assumption. And it's not, in fact, it's not true in real theories. But it leads to, so I use it as some kind of toy model example. But still, in fact, for some physical problems, especially in statistical mechanics, it turns out to be a good approximation for reasons that I don't have. So it's definitely an approximation. It will give you an idea of the quantitative feature, of the, I'm sorry, the qualitative feature of those transformation that I will discuss, I think, tomorrow, because now I won't have time to discuss the properties of this flow equation. But so these are really approximations, but they are not valid in general. But first, they can be better justified because, in fact, you can show that there are first steps in a more systematic series of truncation of the equation of the renormalization group transformation. And in some cases, for some physical problems, they already give you a good idea of what the properties of your quantum theory or of your statistical mechanical system will be. But take it as really some first level approximation to an exact calculation. You see? Yes?
Excuse me? So if we want to write down this flow equation for arbitrary S, even big S,
yes,
shouldn't we also replace in the logarithm the lambda by lambda over S?
No, because remember, at each time of the operation, we did two things. Remember? First, we integrate over the component of the field. That's the thing that we have been doing here. And where is it written? And then I'm performing the rescaling. So remember, we always have two steps. First, we integrate over the high frequency mode of the field. And then we rescale everything so that the cutoff becomes again lambda, so that we can compare the two. So in this operation, at each step of the operation, the physical cutoff is lambda. In some sense, you know, it means that we are working in dimensional units, which are the units of the energy we are considering. We start with a theory which is at the Planck mass, the Planck energy, so it's 10 to the power minus 23, like that. Okay, and you are expressing all the energy in terms of Planckian energies. You see? For all the energy, you have 1.1, 2, etc., you are expressing the energies in units of the Planck mass. Now, when I perform this calculation, I get an effective theory where all the energies and the impulsion and the momenta are expressed in units of the reference scale energy, which is now the TeV. So all the energies here are expressed in TeV. So I have one TeV or two TeV. My 0.1, it means 0.1 TeV. And so I am comparing what are the properties of the theory. When I say that I'm comparing the property of the theory here for an energy equal to 1 to the property of the theory at this energy with an energy equal to 1, means that I'm comparing the properties of the theory at the Planck scale with an energy of the order of 1 Planck mass, to the property of the theory here, where the energy is equal to 1 TeV. So that's what I am doing, you see? And here, the reference energy scale is 1 TeV, but it's 1 in the unit I'm working with, where here, the reference energy is 1, but it's 1 Planck mass, you see? So the cutoff by this operation first, integrating over the degree of freedom to get an effective action and an effective potential. But then the rescaling means that you are always, you know, you are integrating, then rescaling, integrating, rescaling, integrating, rescaling, integrating, scaling. If you want, you have an onion, you are eating the onion, peeling the onion, but at each time, you are taking glasses which increase the size of the onion, so that your onion has always the same size when you look at it. You see? Yes?
I'm going to have a question. The coefficient in front of the logarithm?
Yes.
It shouldn't depend on lambda?
No, no, because it's a pure number. This coefficient here, I have not written it, but it just comes from the volume of the sphere that I've written here, but I think it's... Yeah, it comes from this coefficient and this coefficient and this coefficient.
But when you
so I can write it. It depends on the dimension. If you want it,
but when you do the derivative, you have a lambda. You have a lambda to the d in front of the ds.
Oh yes, yes, yes. In fact, you have a lambda to the power. Yeah, because then v has a dimension of lambda minus one. So you have no. You're right. So you have a lambda. Two, yes, yes, because V has a dimension of lambda 2, so in fact you have a lambda 2. Okay, so if you prefer A is equal to...
So you have a lambda B.
Yes, you have a lambda D, I'm sorry, yes, because phi has a dimension, so you have a lambda D here. So you have a lambda D, but lambda is fixed in our calculation, it's the lambda we start. So you have a lambda d, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm very sorry. You have a lambda to the power d, just for dimensional reason. And then you have this factor a, which is a pure number, which is 1 over 4 pi to the power d over 2 times the Euler gamma function for d over 2. Yeah, you're right. Thank you for correcting me.
Okay, but then, yeah, as far as... Okay, but at first, if we expand the logarithm, it should give us something related to the beta function.
Yes.
It's somehow related to the beta function.
Yeah, it will be related to the beta function that we have computed last time on Monday, I think, on Tuesday. And I will discuss that tomorrow, because now I have no time to stop. So I have no time to say what it gives, for instance, for the remember, if we start from a local potential with the phi squared, the phi 4, and the phi 6 cube, now we can do the calculation explicitly, because we know what is the second derivative of the potential. We can write the log, and for instance, we obtain a partial nonlinear differential flow equation, but you can put it on the computer and study it, or make some further approximation, and that I will discuss that tomorrow, and I will show you how we recover and why you recover the beta function of perturbation theory. Why, by going from high energy to low energy, we recover results which were obtained by going from low energy to high energy. But I will do that tomorrow. Okay, thank you. Yes?
Is it true that the lecture tomorrow is at 10:30?
We get?
The lecture tomorrow.
Yes. Ah, one warning. My lecture tomorrow, Friday, my lecture is at 10:30 because I switch with Professor Trivedi for some reason. Okay. But there will be a lecture.
It's only for Friday or the rest of the
tomorrow.
Tomorrow.